In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey guys, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours. It is Super Bowl Sunday. You might be listening to this on Wednesday when I put it up on the blog, but either way, I didn't want to do a live show on Super Bowl Sunday. I didn't think we were going to have that much of a turnout because of it, but I do want to go ahead and make sure that I put something special up for the day. Anyway, guys, okay? But even though this is just a recording, I do want to go ahead and say it is still sponsored by EMS Manager. So go check them out at emsmanager.net. Get yourself a free trial. It's a customized trial, that is, and you can get it over at emsmanager.net. It's a cool, innovative, and easy-to-use EMS employee scheduling and management software. So today's show is a replay of an interview I did back in 2008 with Robert Davis, or Rob Davis. Rob was a popular poster over at EMT City, and he was handled over there with Dust Devil. And Rob sat down with me, and we talked a little bit about, you know, where EMS stood, the challenges facing EMS, where he thought it was going, how we could get there, the attitude of your average provider. And again, this was done 2008. Unfortunately, Rob passed away in 2011 of Lou Gehrig's disease. So I was never able to do a follow-up interview with Rob. But I think if you listen to this interview and think about what Rob and I talked about as opposed to what is going on today, there's not that many changes, guys, that have gone on. So what's holding us back, guys? What is it that we can't seem to get past to make some of these changes that Rob and I talked about? Let's take a listen and listen to Rob's insight. I think as an EMS provider, he was a nurse, a military man, a police officer, a firefighter. He pretty much saw every aspect of emergency services, and I think his insight is really useful, and I think it was something that not enough of us got to really hear and understand where he was coming from, okay? And I think part of this interview and what we talked about in a way motivated me back in 2008 to really make EMS Office Hours an open forum for all EMS professionals to get the word out and to try to be able to make these changes and these advances that we talk about, okay? Let's take a listen, guys. I think you're going to really enjoy this session.
His views on some of the issues that are facing EMS today. I have Rob here with me right now, but before we get started, I just want to give Rob an opportunity to just kind of introduce himself and give us a little bit of a background on what he's doing in EMS and where he's been and where he's going. Rob?
Well, I'm Rob Davis, and currently I'm working as a nurse and a paramedic for the Army in Iraq. I started off in EMS just a couple years after emergency hit television because I thought it'd be a lot of fun. I was still in high school, and the funeral homes were still running EMS back then. All it took was a driver's license and a first aid card.
Yeah, right.
And as the holder of an advanced first aid card, I was one of the highest trained guys working at the time. So I've watched a lot of changes since then. Since then, I worked in EMS in just about every role. I've worked fire department delivered EMS, hospital-based EMS, even police-based EMS, private EMS. I've seen it from all angles and ended up with a pretty passionate interest in watching it develop from the roots we came from in the 70s.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, that's one of the reasons why I invited you to do this session with me, because I've noticed a lot of your posting within, you know, some of the EMS forum, and you know, knowing your background briefly from what I can, you know, see and from what I've seen about you online, and I felt that it would be a great idea to have somebody with your experience and your history to kind of, you know, give your insight on what you think is going on with EMS these days, and you know, maybe kind of open some eyes to some of the younger people that are coming in, and even some of the older guys that are still out there and kind of like entrenched in their older, you know, their old ways, and you know, maybe you can give some insight, you know, in what EMS is doing and where we're going and what our possibilities are.
Well, be happy to do that.
Well, what I like to just ask you just like some general questions. I mean, we only have about a half hour or so on this session, so we're not going to really go too deep into these topics. But I think if we can just, you know, kind of talk about them in general and get an idea of what your opinion are, and I think you and I probably think a lot alike when it comes to these. So you know, you might hear me just kind of, you know, saying mm-hmm and aha a lot, but. One of the primary things that I know that you're very vocal about where EMS is heading, like where the immediate future of EMS is. And I'm just wondering what you think that would be. Where do you think EMS is going?
Well, I wish we could fill half an hour with that one, but that's a pretty short question right there. Unfortunately, it's my observation that right now we're headed nowhere. And that's the thing that kind of fuels my passion. I haven't really seen any progress in three decades of EMS. Most of what we call progress is really just treading water. We're keeping up with the advances in medicine in general. We call those changes in EMS, but they're really just changes in medicine that we're drafting upon.
Right.
The landscape isn't really a lot different than how it looked on television in 1972, and in way too many places in the country, they haven't even caught up to 1972. So, I think right now we're running in place and not really making a lot of future movement. That's what I'd like to see change.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, a lot of the changes that you see are more in like treatment modalities, you know, for the patients that we're on, and like you said, that's something that goes kind of across the board with all patient care, you know, and we're just at a different level of that. I think that the EMS as a whole, like the structure of us hasn't really gone anywhere. And I'm not quite sure where we should be going, you know, either in the short term or the long term, but I definitely think that, you know, there are changes that need to get made in order to bring us to a level where we should be. And I'm wondering where you think, like let's say for a short-term goal, what do you think we could be heading in?
Well, I think our number one goal at this point should be to establish ourselves as a profession, a real medical profession. Right now we're not. We're hardly medical. We're kind of a stepchild of public safety for other people. We're just a hobby for volunteers, a side job for firemen. It's not EMS isn't what people think of as a primary profession, but it has to be both medical and a profession, not those other things. And I think transforming ourselves into medical professionals will bring us all the benefits that we're looking for, professional respect, the appreciation, the clinical sophistication, and the money that people think that we're worth here. We're just not going to see that as long as we continue to be a stepchild of public safety or a stepping stone to other jobs instead of a standalone profession.
Sure. Well, I know even from my personal experience, a lot of the people that I knew that were either my partners or that were part-time workers, they were always, you know, looking to get into the fire department. That, you know, they were like just like a, you know, a way station until they got called to the fire department, until they got called to the police department. And, you know, like you said, no one takes it on as a serious career. I mean, there are those of us that do, But there's, you know, I think the percentage of that is kind of small compared to the percentage that are just looking to go other places. I mean, one thing that I think, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but maybe some of the public perception of EMS too kind of hurts us from getting into getting that recognition and getting that professional recognition, because we are always attached to so many different levels, and that goes with the volunteers part of it, with the fire department part of it, and you know, people don't really recognize us as our own entity. And maybe some public awareness might be in order to try to bring us, you know, into light and maybe get that money and that support we need to kind of bring us to that next level.
Oh, absolutely. Image is everything. And establishing a unique image that identifies us as who we are in making that professional image is one of the keys to getting us to where we go. It's a long road, but I mean, there's certainly ways to do it. It's not hopeless.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always say that, you know, that most fire departments, they have the greatest public relation, you know, people going where they can, you know, pretty much, you know, do something catastrophic, and you see it on the news for, you know, a few hours and it'll be gone. But then if someone, you know, in EMS does something like that, you'll see the news and papers and on the radio, and it'll take a lot longer for it to go away.
Absolutely, you know, yeah.
Same with the fire department.
I identify with that because, I mean, certainly I went through all those phases. I wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to be a firefighter. I wanted to be a paramedic. I wanted to be everything. And so many people come into the field have that attraction to the triple
right.
That they see on TV, and that's just natural. That comes with the territory, but unfortunately, it also leaves us with a lot of candidates who are really have unrealistic expectations and just aren't really committed to patient care. They're just kind of in it for themselves.
Yeah, they're kind of committed to the sirens and the lights, I guess.
Sure, and that's unavoidable, but. Certainly, we can overcome that as we become a profession, and more of a profession and less on a job.
Right, exactly. Do you have any specific ideas why you think we're not going ahead, or what do you think we could actually do to possibly, you know, start getting into like on the right course?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you just touched on one of the biggies, and that's really comes down to our people. You know, EMS is people. We're made up of our people, and our people are what we are. So we really have to kind of start attracting the right kind of people. I mean, we get a lot of good people, but look at our turnover. I mean, our turnover is less than 5 years average for the average person that comes in EMS, and a great many of them never even actually enter EMS. They go to EMT school, and they run on a volley squad for a couple of years, and then they finish high school, and it's not fun anymore. Then real life calls, and they can't make a living as it. So, you know, we've got to look at a way at attracting people who are looking for a career and not just a hobby or not looking for excitement of the blood and the sirens and the uniform, not looking
right.
for a power trip, not looking for a stepping stone to the fire service or to medical school or people who simply have no education and no career options. We want people who are looking to do this because they want to practice medical care, and they're looking for an intellectual challenge, not just an adrenaline rush.
Right.
Having people who aren't in it for the long haul like this really hurts us in so many ways. It creates an unstable workforce, a constant turnover that the employers love it because if nobody stays around long enough to retire, that saves them a lot of money.
Sure.
But it hurts us because we don't develop leaders for the future that way. If nobody stays around for the future, we don't have leaders for the future. And I count myself in this category, is even those that do stay around for the long haul, a lot of us just really don't get the sufficient education to develop into the kind of leaders that that can really go to the public and get the respect that we need. So obviously, you know, number one would be to improve our the quality of people that we attract to the field. That way, we've got leaders that you know, that can get to the public and even to the medical community and establish rapport and respect that we need. Of course, the biggest way to change the quality of our people is to change the quality of our education and our educational standards. Right now, our entry level of EMT, they've got less training than a nurse's aide or a nail salon technician on the corner. And, you know, everything is math. If you do the math on that, that's pretty embarrassing that we're sending people out to call themselves medical lifesavers that have less training than the nail technician on the corner. So that's got to change. I mean, even our paramedics have less education than the guy who cuts my hair. So, you know, if that's why when you line us up side by side with other professions, even though we like to pat ourselves on the back and call ourselves lifesavers, we're really pretty poorly equipped for what we're being sent out to do compared to, our neighbors to the north in Canada, where they start out at a minimum of 2 years of education just to practice at the EMTB level. So, you know, we've got a lot of growing to do. Unfortunately, we've also got a lot of factors fighting against us.
Well, I think that also, with equity education, I think it also helps with the whole longevity of it, like you were saying, as far as the high turnover. I think people that kind of, you know, that are required to go to a certain amount of education to be a paramedic, you know, whether it's a 2-year degree or whatever it might be, they kind of get like a vested interest in their career by doing that.
That's
a lot. You know what I mean? It's not going to be, oh, well, I'm just going to do that so I can get into the fire service. You know, they're going to realize that, you know, 2 years, it's going to be 2 years of their life before they can, you know, even get into the starting gate. You know, so I think that's definitely a great, you know, one of the points too. You know, for as far as the fight, you know, for increasing the education and making it a mandatory, requirement.
Absolutely. I mean, that way we end up with practitioners who are not only better prepared, but they're better committed. They like you said, they have a vested interest and they have a commitment to the profession that they've actually paid a significant price for.
Right. Well, I think education is definitely a big key into where we really should be heading, and I think that it's something that I think that a lot of places are starting to kind of realize that. I mean, I know the National Registry is trying to come out with a thing where they have to, you're going to be mandated to go to an approved type of institution in order to be nationally registered now, and I think that's kind of a positive step in the right direction, but it's just one entity, you know, in a sea of many that really, you know, is on board with that type of thing. You know, you're talking about
Absolutely.
Taking a lot of, you're going to take food out of people's mouths by telling these technical schools that, oh, well, you know, your year and a half of paramedic school is no longer a valid education, curriculum to be a paramedic. Everyone has to go to college to do it. And, you know, this is where I think a lot of the fighting comes from and a lot of the stumbling blocks are from, is that you have all these people that, you know, have their interests in their schools and their teachings, and in order to advance, they're going to have to give those up or change significantly in order to advance.
All right, and that really leads us to just another one of the major factors, probably the next major factor that holds us back from progressing. That's the fragmentation of our field. We're very fragmented. I always hear people say, we need a united voice. That the reason we can't go anywhere is because we need a united voice. We all need to quit squabbling and fire versus private versus volleys versus paid. We all need to get together and sing kumbaya and get along if we're going to progress. But the sad reality is, I don't see how that can happen. Each of those entities has a different agenda, and they have different priorities. And you can't change those priorities. We have a saying in Iraq that the enemy's inside the wire, and they're disguised as one of us, and that's what's going on in EMS. In many cases, we're our own enemies. The people who aren't interested primarily in EMS, but interested in EMS only as a means to an end, like the fire service and the volunteers, they want to hold on to their piece of the pie, and I can certainly understand that. I don't want to lose my job or my cash cow either. But unfortunately, this creates special interests whose primary interest is not the profession at all, just what benefits they can get from it for their little corner. So, like I say, I'm afraid we're not ever going to pull that unified voice together. If we're ever going to become a dedicated medical profession, we're going to have to, somebody's going to have to take one for the team and step back and let us focus on what our primary job is. That goes back to establishing the professional image you were talking about. And most people assume that that paramedic, you say you're a paramedic, they assume that you're one of two things. You're either just a fireman or just an ambulance driver. The term paramedic, unfortunately, just really hasn't caught on the professional image that it should have in 1972, because we're associated with being a part-time entity of something else instead of a full-time medical profession. So,
now, do you think that I know I've seen discussions like this before about how there should only be like one title, whether it's paramedic or something along those lines, to kind of focus the public on just one type of a job. Structures that they can easily identify with what we do, and that's not just the public, but also politicians and people that actually can make changes to help us. It can sometimes be difficult if they're thinking, well, the EMT, the ambulance driver, with the fire service, is your paramedic, and we're kind of all over the place. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. Do you think that, just having one title, not necessarily one training, but one title would kind of alleviate that perception?
Sure. As a matter of fact, I'm on board with both of those, both one title and one training, actually. But
Well, so am I. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Okay, so, so far I think Rob has given some really cool insight and, I think some good opinions on where EMS stood back then, and I think if you start comparing what we talked about during this interview to now, there's still a lot of similarities, guys. Not much has changed, right? But what I want to do real quick before we go on is to just talk a little bit about EMS Manager. They are sponsoring us here at EMS Office Hours, guys, and really, you've got to go and try out this software for yourself. It really takes a chore out of employee scheduling and management of EMS providers, and it makes it very easy to set up, it's very easy to maintain, and extremely easy to manage. They've got a mobile web app. You can get it from any smartphone, you can get it from any computer, mobile devices, and the web interface that they have is really viewable from anywhere on the World Wide Web. So managers and staff can both oversee, manage, and make requests or even changes to the employee schedules from pretty much anywhere if you've got that connection, right? Now, I mentioned this last week as well, but I want to go ahead and sort of just kind of highlight this again, because the pricing is something we always think about when we talk about using stuff like this, right? Software like this or equipment and tools. The good thing about EMS Manager is that their pricing is based on the size of your organization. It's scaled to the size. So this way, it's always affordable to, even the smallest organization, because it's web-based. So your employee schedule and your software, it's all located in the cloud, right? So what does that mean? Well, it means for you that there's no additional IT costs that you're going to have to worry about,
right? So that's why it's pretty affordable, okay, guys? And again, it's priced to the size of your organization. Now, I mentioned this as well, is that they've got free training, there's free tech support, free system software updates, all of it is for free. And I know one thing that I like about it is that their tutorials and all are all video-based, lots of videos in the area, in the members area, that you can look at to show you how to use different elements of the program, right? Who wants to sit there and read through pages and pages of text, right? So check out the video to show you how to do stuff, and you'll be on your way. So if you think this is something you might be interested in looking at, something you can probably use, which I think you probably can, okay, this day and age, it's all about the web, it's all about smartphones, go check out the free and customizable trial of EMS Manager. It's over at emsmanager.net, and I want to thank them for sponsoring EMS Office Hours, and I've also been sponsoring all the other podcasts over at the ProMed Network as well. You know, they are really proud to sponsor and support EMS providers and managers through this sponsorship, and they really support what we do here on these podcasts, guys. So, you know, it really does make a difference when you show them support as they're supporting us. So do me a favor, go show your support for them. Take a few minutes, check out the free trial that they have over at emsmanager.net. You know, Alatech is the company that has made EMS Manager. It's for online employee scheduling and workforce management. Check them out, emsmanager.net. Again, it's free. You can customize it, and it really is an amazing scheduling and management tool that you can go ahead and use, guys. So go check them out, emsmanager.net. All right, guys, let's get back to the interview with me and Rob. I think you're going to enjoy the second half of this session. So let's go ahead and get right into it and listen to what else Rob had to say.
As far as one title, I've really kind of always figured this. It doesn't do us any good to fragment into first responder and emergency care attendant and EMTBI and EMT or yeah. EMTI and EMTB and EMTP and LP, and every right. state adds two or three other abbreviations
some
to
have,
the equation.
Some have numbers also. Some are like EMT and there's a number after an L. And,
right. You know. And I would say more than half of the general public has no idea what EMT stands for. I hear different people give different definitions all the time in the lay public. So you know, the public shouldn't have to guess who we are. The public
right.
shouldn't have to guess what we stand for. Again, I hate to keep going back to Canada, but they've really come so much further in such a shorter time than we have that they're a good example to look to. And In Canada, except for one province, everybody is a paramedic. They have a couple levels of paramedic, but they all have the paramedic name. So it lessens confusion. They're not associated with the fire service there also. So people know what a paramedic is there. When they look at two people stepping out of an ambulance, they don't have to wonder who are they
what they can do. Yeah, what they're allowed to do,
exactly.
Like that. I mean, I understand that, you know, I mean, having one certification and the one title as far as like you know, as far as paramedic goes and one set of education and all is, you know, is the ideal thing. And in some areas, you know, regionally, you might need to go for additional training if you're in a hot weather climate or a cold weather climate, and you know, there could be different levels as far as that goes to meet the requirements for that region. But I think nationwide, there should be a set standard of education and set standard as far as certification and title and, you know, things like that. And, you know, different areas are going to require different, you know, some different levels beyond, you know, the basics. And that, you know, you've got flight medics and things like that, and all kind of fall into that category as well. But I think that the coming out of the gate, like you said, I think that by having everybody know this is one title and with one set of education, climate, I think will definitely put us on the right road. But then, like we mentioned before, you're going to go back to everyone trying to kind of hold their little rice bowl and not looking to give up, you know, their little area of responsibility.
That's absolutely true. And like I said, I mean, this is human nature. Everybody wants to hold on to their piece of the pie. But the, right now, while we're fighting over the pieces, the pie's going stale. So it's time that, you know, somebody steps away from the table and you know, let society benefit from a good pie.
Right.
And you bring up education, and really that's the bottom line. I always say that there are really no questions facing our profession that can't be solved by education. Education is the key to everything that's going to allow us to progress. And as you mentioned, significantly elevating our entry-level education requirements would at least put us on the starting gate, on the right track to heading that direction.
Well, I know, too, it's by having, you know, if everyone's in the same, and you know, all in this kind of same pool, and like you said, everyone comes out of the same starting gate, and you're going to have to be much easier to, I think, also even with that, to get people that are in positions to allow us to progress are going to be also much more on board if they realize that, you know, we have a more advanced education. I don't think we're going to, everyone's, you know, coming out of some type of a technical school, you know, that took 6 months or took a year or even less at times.
Sure. And of course, the new National Registry requirement that they're going to require accredited schools, it's just the most exciting thing I've heard in the last 20 years in EMS. But it's not as draconian as it sounds on the surface. Of course, they're still going to allow technical schools. They're just going to have to meet some pretty stringent standards.
Right, exactly.
So there's still going to be people entering without diplomas and doing it in a year instead of 2 years. And I don't have a whole lot of problem with that. At this juncture, I'd like to see everybody up to at least 2 years. But, you know, not everybody, and not all the technical schools are being, or non-diploma schools are being put out of business. They're just going to have to elevate their game, and we're eliminating,
which is what it should be.
Sure, we're eliminating some of the lower end, you know, people who just can't get with professional standards, but certainly not tech school education, which has, you know, been the foundation of the profession for 30 years and still performs a valuable service. We just want to make sure everybody's performing it at the same level.
Right, exactly.
People always compare us to the public safety agencies. You know, how come we don't get paid like the firemen? How come we don't get respected like the firemen? How come we don't get hours like the firemen? And I really think that's an unfair comparison because, I mean, who we should be is not firemen and not public safety people. That's not the service we're here to provide. We need to compare ourselves to the medical professionals that we're really working side by side. Those are really the professions that are our peers, not the firemen. Those are the people performing the same kind of work that we're performing is the medical professionals. And right now we've got less than half the education of the x-ray technicians and laboratory technicians who don't even deal in patient care.
Right.
And they have to have 2 and 4 year degrees, mostly 4 year degrees, just to run blood tests without ever even seeing a patient. So, you know, considering the critical nature of our patient interactions, that's simply unacceptable to have less than half that education. So our minimal entry-level education is going to have to come up to at least match the bottom of the medical ladder, which is nursing, who is at a 2 year entry level. And being a 2 year nurse myself, I'm ashamed to say I'm only a 2 year nurse. I feel it's just barely adequate. Something I've noticed all along the line. I was starting out as advanced first aid. I thought, well, I knew it all. And then I took, you know, first responder school. And I thought, wow, I can't believe they let me work with just a first aid card. And then I went to EMT school. And I thought, wow, I can't believe they let me work with just first responder training. And I went to paramedic school. I thought, wow, I can't believe they let me work with just EMT training. And then I went to nursing school. And I thought, wow, I can't believe they let me work with just paramedic training. So there is so much, there's always another level. There's so much more to learn in medicine.
I have so many friends that are physicians that are, you know, 20-year board certified surgeons and emergency physicians, and every day they still realize how much they don't know. So, you know, when
that's
I hear
a big part of it too, like you just exactly. That's a big part of it too. Is that you, even with the entry level training, there's still so much to know. No matter how long, I mean, you know, how long you've been doing, you know, the job, being that it is a medical profession, and there is so much to learn on a daily basis, you know, on different things that you can encounter, and the education is left up, you know, should be left up to the individual to continue it. And I think by having the entry level requirement, you're going to have people who will be, you know, dedicated to, you know, continue their education afterwards, even if it's just with CME based type training.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, currently, the way we're set up, where we have the EMT level and then the paramedic level, there's such a concrete delineation between those two levels. It's almost become the terms ALS and BLS have almost replaced the terms EMT and paramedic. And I find that to be a problem in our identity.
Well, that's probably because, like you said before, with all the different levels of EMT and paramedic, that there's not a fine line anymore between BLS and ALS. It's kind of like all, you know, intertwined together. We have BLS now that can give, you know, bureau treatments and EpiPens and things like that, and, you know, and kind of all getting mixed together, I think.
Yeah, and Ed, I listened to Dr. Bledsoe's interview last time around, and he mentioned that we really have to get away from this whole ALS, BLS mindset, and concentrate on the holistic concept of patient care, and I totally agree with him on that. Right now, it just drives me crazy hearing people saying, "Well, this is a BLS skill; that's not ALS," and they're talking about giving a prescription medication. I'm thinking, well, now, that may be an EMT skill, but it's not a BLS skill if it requires a physician's order. So, you know, and we shouldn't be quibbling on who's qualified to perform what. The reason we shouldn't be is because everybody should be, before they get on an ambulance, should be trained to the level that they're qualified to perform advanced interventions. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, my plan to elevate education, the entry level of education for EMS, would push EMTs out, not so much out of EMS altogether, because, I mean, there's always going to be a need for first responders in our society. They perform a very important function, and the EMTB is ideally suited to that role. But, again, when the public sees two people getting off an ambulance, they need to know that both of those people are prepared to do whatever it takes to give them the maximum that's available in mobile intensive care, not have to call for help. Of course, one of the other problems with not having two paramedics on every ambulance is all the work falls and all the responsibility falls on one man's shoulders. And that's something else that contributes significantly to people only staying 5 to 10 years in the field. It's 5 to 10 years of having all the responsibility and all the workload 5 days a week, 3 to 5 days a week on an ambulance. It's just that contributes to burnout.
Sure. So, well, I know that the New Jersey, they came out with a report, and right now I know New Jersey's got a two paramedic system, and I know that they're looking, the report had recommended going to a one EMT, one paramedic system. And, you know, a lot of the paramedics out there are like you said, they're looking to leave if that ever becomes a reality. None of them are looking to, you know, to do that as a full-time thing. And like you said, you know, being the only one that's responsible and providing all of the primary, you know, advanced life support, and, you know, it's a lot of stress, and then it's hard for anyone to deal with for any length of time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in everything that's one of the primary things we have to look at as we try to advance the profession, is what's going to contribute to keeping people in the field. What's going to contribute to making this a profession that when people join, they intend to actually stay here and make a career of it, not just how can we make it more fun for the 5 years you're gonna that people are gonna stay in until they move on to something else. And again, EMT or education is the answer to that. Again, elevating those standards is gonna push EMTs out. It's gonna push the volunteers out because nobody wants to spend 2 years of full time college education just to get a hobby. So
right.
So that's going to, if this is a requirement, suddenly communities all over the United States are going to have to stop spending money on Christmas lights for City Hall and paying people to empty trash at the courthouse and mowing lawns at the park and washing police cars. The police can wash their own cars, and they're going to have to start providing professional medical care because suddenly the volunteer system is going to collapse when all of a sudden they're going to have to meet some professional requirements. This also, of course, is going to affect the fire service, and I'll shed many a crocodile tear the day the fire service loses their cash cow, but that's really their problem right now. Right now they're robbing Peter to pay Paul. They're using their involvement in EMS to justify their own existence. They're using 95% of their calls to help pay for the 5% of the fire calls that they run. And
and basically the numbers.
Sure, we have the fire service can thank EMS for saving their jobs basically because if it wasn't for that, the whole reason the fire service got saddled with EMS in the first place is because government entities start saying, hey, we're paying these guys a lot of money to sit on the porch with their Dalmatian and whistle at women walking by on the street all day. Things aren't burning, but these guys are still getting paid. What else can we get them to do? And the concept of EMS came around, and at first it was not firemen doing it. They were taking hospital interns. They were the first experiment was to take unemployable people, I believe it was in Detroit, and they said, well, what can we give these guys to do? And they start training them as EMTs. Then they start having programs where they were trying to take medics coming back from Vietnam and turn them into medics. And it was only when that concept caught on that other cities that didn't have the big money as the big cities said, well, hey, we got these guys sitting around all day and they're not doing much, so well, let's just get them to do it. And, of course, they were pretty bored, and they jumped right on that. And, of course, 30 years later, a lot of them are really wishing they hadn't jumped on that because now they're not getting any sleep like they used to. But the administrators love it because, again, they get to rob Peter to pay Paul. But, how to fund a fire department should not be of any concern to those trying to design a quality EMS system. It should be the last thing considered, if at all. So, And if it's holding back the quality of care, there's just no excuse for saying, well, we've got to do it this way because those guys aren't doing anything anyhow. I mean, if I was still a fireman, I'd be insulted by that my community wanted me to do it because they think I need an extra job.
So. Yeah, most firemen are. Most firemen don't want nothing to do with it. They want to be firemen. They don't want to they don't want to run on ambulance calls, and a lot of them do resent it. You know, whether they're getting an extra stipend for it or not, they still, most of them don't really want to do it. They want to be firemen. And that's, I don't blame them. That's what they signed up for. They wanted to fight fires and rescue and things like that. They didn't want to do abdominal pains and chest pains and like that.
Right. And of course, no delivery model works, fits all sizes. Every community's got their special layout and their special needs and their special demographics that's going to dictate, how the need for EMS is filled. And fire delivery is going to remain a viable option in a lot of communities. And I don't have a problem with that. I get accused of fire bashing quite a bit. But, I spent quite a few years as a paid professional firefighter. That's where I got my paramedic training. So I'm not anti-fire. I'm just pro-growth of the EMS profession. And,
right.
And fire's just going to have to kind of right now they're fighting us tooth and nail. Both the fire lobbies and the volunteer lobbies are fighting not not so much fighting losing a piece of the pie, but fighting with the growth of the profession. They're afraid that if it takes 2 years of college and a degree to become a paramedic, that they're not going to be able to afford to send their people, and right. and that's going to be too expensive for them.
Right, but like you said, it's going to force the local government to do away with Christmas lights and other non-essential, costs in order to pay for what is truly needed, which is an EMS service that works.
Right, and the fire chiefs are thinking, well, I can't afford to send my people to 2 years of college on a firefighter's salary, but they can't afford to send them to 4 months of fire school on salary. So, and I understand that, but again, it's not about them. It's not about their turf. It's not them being able to save their involvement in EMS. It's about EMS. It's about the interests of the profession and the interests of our patients. And both of those are best served by elevating our educational standards.
Well, I've only got a few more minutes left here for this session. The only other thing I wanted to touch on before we run out of time is I just want to get your view as far as possibly maybe getting alliances with other healthcare professions and how that might really support us and our growth and where we're trying to get to.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because forming alliances with the other health professions is just an absolute must. That's who we want to join. That's who we want our brothers to be, not the fire service, but the medical service. And doctors can be our best friends, or they can be our worst enemies. And so we definitely want their respect and their trust. Right now, a lot of them are really on the fence about that because they see, every day medics walking in with patients that didn't treat the patient right. They have no idea what's wrong with the patient when it seems pretty obvious to them. And they see how iffy the educational standards are as well as the quality of the people out there performing. So we have to prove to them that we're professionals worthy of their trust and worthy of their respect. And, of course, this starts with professional education. If they know that we at least committed to a professional education, that goes a long way to proving to them that we're serious and that we're not just there because it's our ticket to the fire service. So, again, education is the key. Another, beyond the physicians, we absolutely have to win over the nurses. Right now, the nursing organizations, I know being a nurse is they're opposing us at every turn, just like the fire service and the volunteer lobbies are. The official, not all nurses now. A lot of nurses are doing a lot for EMS. Most paramedic schools are taught by nurses, but the nursing organizations are really give us kind of a jaundice eye. They're afraid that we're getting a little uppity and trying to encroach on their territory. In a lot of ways, we have been. So we've got to patch that up. We have been stepping on their toes. We've got to stop trying to use EMS as a back door into the hospital, a way to circumvent nursing school.
I don't want to cut you off, Rob, but I got about maybe 45 seconds left, so I just want to let you know I really appreciate your time today, and I know that we only kind of scratched the surface on a lot of the topics that we talked about, and I'd love to have you back and really maybe hold another session and maybe focus a little bit more on one of the single topics we talked about and really maybe get more in depth into it and maybe even open up the line to some callers and get their opinions on things, and I think it's something that can really go on for a long time, and I think it might maybe you'll get that one person that will take the bull for somebody and step up and start trying to make the change that we need to make. So thanks again, and I'm sure I'll see you over there in the forums one of these days soon.
Thanks so much, Jim. I really appreciate it.
All right, guys, that is it. Listen, I thought it was a great interview.
You know, if you listen to the end of that interview, I talk a little bit about how I'd like to continue the conversation and keep engaging EMS providers out there, and thinking that if we could just get one or two people for every episode that we do here at EMS Office Hours to sort of engage in the things we talk about, the changes, the difficulties that face us as EMS providers. You know, guys, I've mentioned it before, and Josh has too, this is an opinion-based show. We base it on education. We base it on what we see in our experiences that go on out there. But I'm hoping that our opinions somehow affect some of you out there and get your thought processes going, get you to start trying to change things, even if it's just in your organization or just in your area. Little by little, we can make these changes and we can get to places that Rob talked about. Unfortunately, you know, Rob, again, he had passed away back in 2011, and I never really got to do a follow-up interview with him. So to me, sort of bringing this interview back to life is a way to sort of continue the interview with him and continue the conversation that's going. And I think we've come a long way, EMS Office Hours. We have opened up the phone lines. We have opened up the chat room. And we've made it a way for you to come here every week for an hour and bring up any topic you want to bring up and discuss anything you want to discuss and chime in, positive or negative, on the comments and the opinions that we have here on the show. Guys, that's it. Please go to my main website, the EMSSEO.com. A lot of great free and paid study and training tools there. Go check out Josh's website as well. Josh couldn't join me today because this is just a pre-recorded announcement. But you know what? Go check out Josh's site. It's at wantnew.com. It's WANTYNU, wantynu.com, or o2wrench.com. Either one. And check out Josh's great EMS tool. It really is the only oxygen wrench, guys, you're ever going to need. So go check that out as well. If you have any comments, concerns, questions, suggestions for a show, send them to me. My email address is admin@emsseo.com. And of course, put your comments below in the show notes, guys. Love to hear what you have to say. Until next week, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.